Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our teleconference this evening, The Treatment of Emotional Eating. My name is Rochelle Rice, and my guests this evening are Karen Adonisi and Cindy Elms. Let me tell you a little bit about Karen. She's a licensed professional counselor and has been working in the mental health arena since 2001. She received her undergraduate degree in psychology from George Mason University and her graduate degree from Northern Arizona University in counseling. She most recently was the director of clinical services at Rosewood and is currently in private practice. Her expertise is in treating eating disorders, trauma and abuse, women's issues, and relationship issues in individual, group, and family therapy. Our second guest is Cindy Elms, and Cindy is a registered dietitian working in the mental health field for over 20 years. She graduated with her bachelor's in science from Northern Arizona University in 1987. Her work has been with clients who have multiple nutritional concerns. However, a majority of her work has been with the eating disorder population, including those with diabetes. Most recently, Cindy was the director of nutritional services at Rosewood Centers for Eating Disorders, where she helped to develop programs and curriculum, including a binge eating disorder program. So I'd like to welcome both Cindy and Karen to the call, and thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Rochelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. So one of the things that I thought we'd start out with is to just, again, tell people, I wanted to let the callers know why we came together on this as part of a way to help women, because each of us believe not only in the wellness of the emotional eater or the binge eater, but also in helping her move her body. And by working with movement, nutrition, and mental health, it was the perfect combination to help women really get a sense of wholeness or a way back to their health and well-being. So, Karen, I wondered if you could start with, let's talk about the definition. You wanted to be sure that we understood or that we could clarify the definition of binge eating versus emotional eating, and so we can help people on the call understand a little bit more about that.
Sure, and I believe your call last week with Amy talked a little bit in detail about the actual binge eating diagnosis, and so that is something that is going to be coming in the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic Statistics Manual that's going to be coming out next year. And binge eating talks a lot about eating large quantities of food at one given point in time and kind of using that to fill up. We've known about bulimia, and that's been diagnosed for years, and that's kind of the same thing as binge eating minus the purging. So it's somebody who binges and purges. Emotional eating is slightly different. Emotional eating could be someone who overeats consistently. So it doesn't mean necessarily that they're sitting down consuming thousands of calories at one given point in time. It could mean that throughout the entire day, they find themselves eating past the full point. When it's eating, and the key to that would be the emotional component, that when they feel like they're angry, sad, even sometimes happy, whatever emotion it is, that they find that the thing that they run to for comfort, satisfaction, is the food.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. The one thing that you say, which I've heard a few clients say to me, is this sense of never being hungry, like always full, like just has food in them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling of, yeah.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, anything you want to add to that definition or the sense of the emotional eating?
Well, I think that on the flip side, emotional eating, also you may logically know that you're not empty, but you feel empty, and that drives you to eat more and more. So even though logically the food has been there, it doesn't. You feel unsatisfied, and you're driven to have more.
Mm-hmm.
So it can people can experience it a variety of ways, and the same person can experience both. Effects.
That's a terrific point, too. Thank you. So, Karen, let's talk a little bit about how you work with, you know, we're talking about the treatment of binge eating or emotional eating. How do you work with this client different than a traditional therapist, let's say?
Well, I think sometimes, Cindy and I talk about this all the time, but sometimes a traditional therapist can cross over their boundary in a sense of starting to maybe give some nutritional advice. Mm. In their sessions as well, and making the focus be, you know, on the food and how to help the client to decrease the amount of food that they're eating, because the client might come in with the hope of, you know, changing their eating habits or losing weight. And so a traditional therapist might focus on that with the client, where I focus on what is underneath all of that and what the emotion is that's driving it and where that emotion came from, and how can we work through that so that way there's not even the need or desire to fill yourself up with food. So a lot of therapists use cognitive behavioral approach where it's very coping skill oriented, where I use more of an emotional approach to get to the root issue, to change completely and to not just Band-Aid the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting what you say, because so you're talking in a sense of scope of practice, which is sometimes what I run into as being a trainer, where the client will come in either with some food issues and or some mental health issues that might need to be addressed. So as health professionals, we really need to be clear on what our scope of practice is.
Absolutely. I mean, there's everyone on the call probably even knows there. You know, there's so much yo-yo dieting, and it's the diet du jour. What is the diet of the week? And, you know, therapists at times will believe in one or another and at times impose that on their clients, which is really ineffective and non-productive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wonderful. And, Cindy, tell us a little bit, as a nutritionist, what's different for you in terms of working with the emotional eater that's different maybe from a traditional nutritionist?
Well, I think that all dietitians are trained in the way that nutrients work in the body and what foods contain those nutrients, how to help a person lay out a nice meal plan so that they can get all those things. But with emotional eating and other ranges of eating disorders, binge eating, anorexia nervosa, and bulimia, it's not just about being real smart about what you need to eat. It's about looking at what the obstacles are and following through. And so, all dietitians, I think, are very good at giving good advice. If we can't identify together, the client and myself, identify together what the obstacles are, then it's very difficult to follow recommendations. So typically, I will see the client will end up coming to me first because they want to lose weight. Mm-hmm. Or they feel that their eating is out of control and it must be unhealthy. And so as a dietitian who works with people who have emotional eating issues, I typically sort of put the nutrition a little bit on the back burner, help that person start looking at the emotional connection, and then as they make headway there, we come back to revisit the nutrition so that they can get what they need and not open the door for more emotional eating.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking a little bit of a crossover with when you're doing the work with Karen then, the back and forth a little bit?
There is, and dietitians have the same issue with scope of practice because it's very easy to become very therapeutic mm-hmm. in what we do. But it's the very best to work with a dietitian and a therapist because they both have their field of expertise, mm-hmm. and you can do certain kind of work with one professional and then balance with the work with the other, and you get the benefit of both people covering all the bases mm-hmm. as part of your team. That's a great way to go.
Wonderful.
The way that I kind of explain it, Rochelle, is, and this adds the movement piece even into it, is that, the work that I do with an emotional eater, the therapist, is to really get them in touch with the emotional connection. However, almost every client that walks through my door that's an emotional eater has difficulty getting in touch with themselves emotionally. And so I look at the dietitian to kind of just set up an outline of, you know, a meal plan that takes away the component of figuring out the nutrition. And I look at a movement specialist like yourself as the person who's the ally in getting them in touch with their body so that they can even get to the emotional stuff. Without those other components, therapy is really null and void.
Mm. So the movement, which we've talked about before, the movement is a way for them to start to get in touch with the feelings in the body and, as I always like to say, the sensations in the body.
Absolutely, which is imperative to deal with the core issues or the issues that are connecting them to the emotional eating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's imperative, this is Cindy, and it's imperative to help even identify hunger and fullness. So it's really helpful from the nutrition end of things when someone's learning what their hunger cues are. If they're not feeling their body, which the movement can really help them get connected with, they can't even begin to know about their hunger or fullness.
Yeah, that's a really interesting part too, because just so that being connected with their body, of feeling the body. So,
mm-hmm.
so this is the part where the three of us, I think, agree just in terms of helping our clients and patients that the movement really is a key element in putting all of these pieces together.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So we know that this emotional eating is not a quick fix. I mean, I know people who've been in this place for years, and the suffering to me that is so strong is just, if I just would love to touch upon a few things that we can help with women, maybe as a, in a sense, a starting point. Like I said, I know it's not a quick fix, but where can someone start? I mean, other than to find I highly recommend that people find a wellness team, and especially around the health at every size principle, where they're not being judged on their size the moment they walk in the door and being told to lose weight. But what would you, Karen, why don't you start? Do you have a sense of what a first step could be for a woman who suffers with emotional eating?
I do, and you know, I agree. Obviously, finding a wellness team is imperative, but that might not be something any of your clients are going to do this evening.
Mm-hmm.
A first step is really, first of all, most people don't even know what the feeling words are, and which are the emotions. You know, a lot of times I'll ask a client, well, what are you feeling? And, you know, they'll say good,
yeah.
Fine. And, you know, well, what does that mean? And so first, you know, you can even Google looking up feeling words, but like identifying them, anger, fear, pain, shame, guilt, joy, passion, love, all of those feeling words, and even having a list of them near you. Or, you know, so many of us have our phones, you know, type it in on a sticky note in your phone, and just having that there so that every single time you think about even wanting to go eat, it doesn't mean you can't go eat. You know, that's not the place that you're at. But first, before you do it, look at that list and say, what am I feeling right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I feeling joy? And then if you start to see a pattern that every time you feel joy, you're going to eat, then that's a connection for you. Or every time you feel angry, or every time you feel sad. And so then you can start to make those connections. Because I think sometimes we try to move our clients a little too quick. Mm-hmm. And so we might, you know, say, okay, well, identify what emotion you're feeling and then feel that emotion and don't go eat. Well, that's crazy when someone's been, you know, emotionally eating for however many years they've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking it in smaller steps and encouraging people to know that they're not a failure if they're, you know, if they're doing the therapeutic work and still eating.
You know, that's fascinating. I love how you also said we could go, people on the call tonight could just Google feeling words. And see, because I think we do come up short on the list of these sensations, because, yeah, that's an excellent first step, Karen. I really like that. So without any judgment, then they're just starting to make a connection with the feeling just by looking at these different words to the times when they want to eat.
Right. And then the next step would actually be, you know, whether they come see a movement specialist or yourself, whatever, that they can start to then say, okay, I feel anger, and then they can go to where do they feel that in their body, then that would be the next step that they would go to.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. That's really terrific. Cindy, again, knowing it's not a quick fix, you know, is there some way that women on our call can maybe start with something tonight or a first step they can do?
You bet. I would even just tag on to what you and Karen have said, and that is you don't need a meal plan or a diet plan to get started on dealing with your emotional eating. What you really need to do is start getting comfortable and familiar with the feelings, and maybe keep not a food journal, but an eating journal, just a journal about your observations before, during, and after eating, about what you feel, what your thoughts are, what the situational things were, and just write it down without any judgment. And you may notice that there's a particular food that you're craving or that you have feel triggered to eat. You can put that down, but the point is not to record how much you're eating and what you're eating. It's to notice the patterns, because, like I said, anybody can follow a meal plan by steel will. That's mm-hmm. not the thing that's going to make the difference.
Mm-hmm.
This is a better starting point. And as you start to learn these patterns and work through those, then the eating part becomes something that you may not ever need a meal plan for. You might need just a couple little tidbits about meeting your nutritional needs, and you're good to go forever.
Mm-hmm.
It won't necessarily mean a structured eating plan in your future, although some people find that that's helpful to get started.
Well, that's what I wanted. Maybe you could just comment a minute on that, the difference between, like, some people don't even know where to start, don't even know what to do, you know, really just have almost like a blank slate, much like we were talking about the feelings, Karen, that you were saying. So do you find that there are people that need sort of, when I say a meal plan, like a little bit of structure to kind of get them going?
You know, there's a million wonderful resources that I could talk about through the Department of Health Services and the U.S. DA and that kind of thing. But really, because our culture is very weight-oriented, I think that it would just reinforce some of the negative comments about body and weight and eating. And so I hesitate to do that. And to begin, the best, the most authoritative person is the person who's dealing with their issues. So that's a good place to start with that information. Then utilizing your treatment team, the team of people that you're getting together, and say, what do you think about this? Do you notice any patterns here? Can you give me some feedback about that? And start asking some information from the outside without taking recommendations of limiting diet or changing foods, just to see the patterns.
So both of you start talking first and foremost about what the patterns are versus trying to, in a sense, fix the problem.
Well, and identifying, being aware of it, because so much about emotional eating is about being numb and not even recognizing what's really happening. So this is an effort to shift to awareness.
And Rochelle, you even said the word fix the problem. I, when I work with my clients, I don't look at it as a problem. You know, I look at it as something that is giving us information. We do certain things because we feel a certain way. And so it is actually, you know, a tool that we can use to figure out what's going on with us internally, in relationships, in the world, and all that kind of stuff. So it can actually be a blessing to have an issue like emotional eating to help you understand yourself and respectively to all the parts of your life.
Karen, I don't know if you could hear, but that was a huge exhale on my end. First of all, thank you for the correction on my on the choice of words. And second of all, to say that emotional eating could be a blessing. That's a very beautiful way to start to work with this, you know, to recognize what could be happening in your world. So just your choice of words, I have to just compliment you, was extraordinary.
Thanks.
So thank you very much.
I wasn't really trying to correct you, but thanks.
It makes a big difference, let me tell you. Well, that's really, really incredible. To each of you, I know, we sat down last year at the BETA conference. We had met before in New York, and what was most interesting is we sat down and we knew we wanted to work together. And for those of you on the call that may not be familiar with the work that I do, my passion is helping you to move in the body you are right now, no matter what size or level of movement you're at. And this can be done no matter what. And this is my passion, is to help you move in your body and connect with the sensations in your body, because most of my clients live in their heads and have cut off from the sensation in their physical body. So this is my passion and my absolute joy and my purpose in life. So I wanted to ask Karen first. Karen, what brings you to this work and why are you so passionate about it?
Well, originally what has brought me to this work was my own eating disorder. I struggled with an eating disorder since about age 12, and I went through the whole gamut of eating disorders. I was anorexic, I was bulimic, and I was an emotional eater as well. And I actually went and sought treatment and got my own treatment and healing and saw the power and the healing that can actually happen when you can make connections and understand why you're doing what you're doing. And so I do this work partially as my giving back to other people. But I also do this work because there's nothing better in life than really sitting across from a client and seeing a connection happen and understanding that they see themselves as they truly are, they accept themselves as they truly are, and that their weight and all of the outside things don't matter, but what matters is who they are internally.
Fantastic. And Cindy, for you, what brings you to this work with such passion?
Well, I think that I was born with as an emotional eater. I don't ever remember not being an emotional eater, but it was so difficult in my life to identify what that was and find a name for it. And that was a frustration that I shared with others. And when I, when we first, as a society, started being able to name it, it was such a relief. I too love to work with people who are finding their way and finding their solutions and coming to acceptance of themselves and real joy. And so working with people, that's where I've learned, starting with my own awarenesses, but then working with people who are finding them themselves, that has made me a better dietitian. And I have great appreciation for seeing people come to that point. So just to be able to help people find a real solution to something that maybe has been minimized in their life, and other people have tried to help them by giving them not helpful answers, like just as much, just exercise more, just put some makeup on and you'll look prettier and feel better. Mm-hmm. All those external solutions for a problem that does not is cannot be fixed by those external ideas. So I really like to help people find that for themselves, and everyone is different, and everyone is very powerful and unique.
Yes, I think you both touched on something, which is to really acknowledge, especially for those on the call this evening, that each of us are unique and individual. And also, both you and both Karen and Cindy gave the power back, in a sense, to the emotional eater. That's the feeling I'm getting, is that she is more, knows more about her body and what's going on than actually anybody. We're just the tool to sort of help them move through it, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about it in a sense of like someone who struggles with emotional eating is a beautiful flower, but in the dark, and only I can see it in the dark, in a sense. Like, so my job is to help bring their flower to the light, because they have this beauty, but they don't see the beauty. Mm-hmm. They don't feel the beauty. They don't understand their own beauty. And when I say beauty, I'm not talking just external beauty. I'm talking who they are internally. And so it's my job to help them see that within themselves and regain that sense of confidence and strength that is already in them but is just hidden.
Mm. Yes.
And just yesterday, Karen and I were talking about how society often pities a person who feels out of control around their eating, whether or not they're overweight, but that is sometimes the issue. And that's really not a position we'd like to take at all, because we know people are stronger than they may be acting or feeling or even perceived by others as. And so it's both of our loves to help that person find that strength and that power in themselves and kind of come back into their own. That's what brings that flower to the light, like Karen was saying.
Yes, and it's interesting because my feeling, especially I just worked with a new client tonight, the idea of being able to move your body because it's so incredible. Like, I can see the movement, and what's amazing is to see the connection that the client makes when they move their body. It is just, I think that we're all talking the same about that we see in the person. In fact, sometimes I'll say, borrow my faith, you know, until you feel that you can be confident again that you can move your body. So
that's funny that you say that, Rochelle, because I always tell my clients to borrow my hope, because sometimes they don't have hope any longer because they've tried X number of diets. They've tried to restrict themselves. They've tried to do all these things, and they just can't. And so they have lost hope, and they think it's a lost cause. And so I tell all my clients, just borrow mine then for a little while, because I believe it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully they can have it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great. So borrow
faith. And that is what we see happen when we work with people, is that it becomes their own.
Yes. And I think the three of us believe that, it is, first of all, that it is possible for it to become their own. And we're there to, as a vehicle to help it happen, but ideally for them to be standing on their own once again with the what they know.
You bet.
Absolutely.
Yeah, terrific. Tell me, Karen, anything else you feel strongly about sharing with our clients tonight in this whole subject of the treatment of emotional eating?
Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't judge yourself. Just take it step by step and work your way through it. And there is hope and healing on the other side, but none of us get to hope and healing without going through some of the pain. And so stick it out.
and get through it, because when you get to the other side, it is life beyond belief.
Mm. And Cindy?
I absolutely echo that. I'll just say a little story, and that is, for years I couldn't I didn't feel like I could make all my Christmas treats, the things that I had grown up with and that meant so much to me, because I couldn't eat them without being out of control. And one year, in January, I was thinking back and realized I had made all the things that were, that I loved and had them sitting on my counter the whole Christmas season, and thinking, I don't remember a time when I overate them or felt out of control, but I didn't also avoid them. And they were actually still sitting there, and it was a huge awareness to me that I had finally achieved something I hoped was true, and that is that I could be in the presence of food without it feeling like it was calling me by name or controlling me. And someone said, "Aren't you mad it took 17 years? And I said, "No, I'm just so glad that it happened, because my hope came true." Yeah. And so there's two ways to look at it, but I am glad that it happened, and there are new things like that every day. And so that makes life very joyful and much better than I ever thought it would be at this stage of my life.
You know, it's interesting. It reminds me of, I can remember a time when there was no food in my house for years, as a matter of fact. I remember a friend saying, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't even," because I couldn't even have it in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a long time to just even get food in the cupboards and food in the freezer or fridge or whatever. So, yeah, it's so well worth the journey. It takes time. It takes time. It takes patience. It takes compassion. But I know that the three of us absolutely believe that any of our clients are so strong and vibrant in what their possibilities are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So this whole piece, you, the two of you, I guess all three of us agree that you need a treatment team, correct, Karen?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. I don't believe that any one of our parts are more important, and I don't believe any one of our parts are less important. I believe that it's a puzzle piece, and each of them fit together nicely that makes it work.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, for those on the call, is there some type of therapist or something that they, or a something they should be looking for when they're looking for a therapist, in case anyone is looking for one? Like, would you recommend CBT, or maybe you could tell them about that, or is there anything in particular?
No, honestly, the thing that that I recommend, number one, is, interview them. Getting a therapist is like buying a car. You need to find the one that fits for you. They're a really good therapist but aren't a good fit for you. And so really going into every meeting a therapist and interviewing them, just getting a therapist that deals with eating disorders might not know the component of it. So that could be a helpful thing, but not a sure start. But anybody who tells you that they do trauma work would be someone, because someone who does trauma work, even if you don't have trauma, someone who does trauma work will know how to go to the emotional component of it.
Okay, great. So someone who does trauma work knows how to get to the emotional component.
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. And Cindy, for anyone who might be looking for a nutritionist, any thoughts, suggestions?
Well, I can tell you from my own point of view that I had an eating disorder before I ever became a dietitian. And so because dietitians are interested in food, it's always possible you could run into somebody who hasn't looked at those issues for themselves. So again, just like Karen said, you would want to interview them and listen for the things that you know are helpful or not helpful. If someone's talking about rules and regulations and have-tos and starts talking about weight, that's probably not a person who can help an emotional eater at that point in time. You'll want to look for somebody in the interview, and I wish there were titles or groups of people that I could direct you to, but there aren't. Somebody who you feel like you can connect with and who will not be focused on weight but will be focused on getting you to that awareness about what eating means to you. And at the same time, giving you some good nutrition information to just help make sure that you're covering the bases and give you a good picture of what the status of the situation is.
Wonderful. And for those of you on the call that might be trying to seek a movement specialist, I would also interview them, or at least meet with them before you actually work with them, to find out a couple of things. First and foremost, that they embrace the health at every size, which means that movement is done for pleasure and not necessarily for weight loss. And second of all is to really get, there's a lot of trainers I feel that think that they can help people lose weight, and no trainer should ever promise you that they can do that. This is not something I feel that is ethical by any means. If your weight changes as a result of a movement program, that's terrific, but no one should be promising you weight loss, especially as far as I'm concerned from a gym situation. So if you need any more information on any more recommendations for any of those, please be sure to email me, Rochelle@RochelleRice.com, and we'll be happy to help. So I'm going to bring this to a close before we open up for our Q&A, and I want to thank both Karen and Cindy so much, and we'll be done with our recording.